morning. May it please the court. Excuse me. Margaret Ling for Mr. Gerardo Rivera. This is an appeal of a jury trial in a drug case involving a hidden compartment. And we raised four issues in our brief, but because of the time limits for the argument, I'm just going to focus on our first issue, which is the missing exhibits, and also the third issue, which was the motion, the district court's denial of our motion for a new trial. The central issue at the trial was whether the defendant, Mr. Rivera, knew about the drugs hidden in the GMC Yukon. He was driving, he was stopped at the checkpoint, and the agents discovered the drugs. The government's case was based on the testimony of agents, of their agents, particularly a lot of testimony regarding the placement of the compartment, how well hidden it was, and the steps they had to take to discover it. Also regarding certain statements that, or the statements that Mr. Rivera made to the agents after he was arrested at the checkpoint. Particularly regarding whether, when and, you know, when and how he purchased the vehicle, and where he purchased it, and where he was going, and what he had been doing in the days immediately prior to this stop.
There were some pretty serious inconsistencies, weren't there?
There were alleged inconsistencies regarding, yes, where he had purchased the vehicle. And those particularly go to my motion for new trial issue, so I really wanted to address that.
That's okay.
Any rate, after Mr. Rivera did testify at trial, and he took some issue with what the agents were saying he had said, and none of those were, the statements were recorded. There was nothing that he signed. And after 2 days of deliberations and five notes, the jury did find him guilty. So turning to our first issue, we set out in our brief the procedural history of what happened with the exhibits, but the salient point is that between the trial in 2004 and the federal public defender being appointed on appeal in 2009, unbeknownst to Mr. Rivera and through no fault of his own, all of the trial exhibits were lost. After the federal defender was appointed, we, of course, ordered the record and we asked for the exhibits, and that's when we learned that in 2006 the defendant's exhibits had been destroyed and that the government had withdrawn its exhibits and archived them, and that those exhibits were no longer in existence.
I'm not quarreling with your choice of words. You said they were lost and you said they were destroyed. They were disposed of in the ordinary course of procedure.
Right, right. That's the terminology that the clerk used.
No, that's okay.
Disposed of. On our motion, this court remanded so that the parties could try to reconstruct the exhibits. And the upshot of that was that while we were able to reconstruct some of the exhibits, none of the dispense exhibits could be reconstructed, and 25 out of 47 of the government's exhibits likewise could not be reconstructed.
Now, here's what I'm wondering. I mean, I understand the desire to have the exhibits, and I would prefer that they not destroy them this early in the keep them longer in a criminal case. But all that said, we're not going to weigh the evidence and say, wow, if I'd had that picture, I would have, as a juror, come out differently. So what is it that we would do with these exhibits, particularly the ones showing the compartment, which seems to be the rub here?
Well, I think it goes to, obviously it goes to my job as the appellate attorney, as well as the court's job, to review all the evidence. And the problem in this case was that there was a lot of testimony, especially on cross-examination, about these hidden compartments, and all of the defense exhibits were photographs of the hidden compartment.
But there's no dispute that the compartment was hidden. As a matter of fact, that's part of your defense, that because it was hidden, that there needs to be more evidence than mere possession. I mean, there's no dispute that it was a hidden compartment, and the exhibits that show what is not is in dispute, how can they be relevant to, how can they aid you in the preparation of your defense. You yourself are saying that the compartment was hidden.
That is correct. Nevertheless, I had to go through the transcript without the exhibits while he was cross-examining on them. And it certainly, this is, what I think is critical is the fact that this actually went back to the jury. And I do think it goes to the sufficiency of the evidence. And the other point is that
which exhibit reflects something that is in dispute in this case that that kept you from filing an effective brief or kept you from being an effective advocate for your client?
Well, Your Honor, first I would say that's really not the standard in this circuit. The standard is when there's new counsel on appeal, we don't have to show prejudice. We just have to show that there was a substantial and significant part.
Well, what significance?
What significance is
in this case where there's no, the pictures apparently have to do with a hidden compartment. There's no dispute that it was hidden. There was testimony about what was contained in the exhibits. There doesn't seem to be any dispute about what the exhibits showed. How can that be significant?
Your Honor, I think it's significant in the fact that this was the entire universe of the defense exhibits. It's significant in the fact that one of the factors for the central issue in this case was Mr. Rivera's knowledge. It was still, that was the issue. Did he know about it? And in a hidden compartment case, one of the factors is to whether there are obvious or remarkable alterations to the vehicle. And this is something that the jury took back with them. This is not just testimony. They actually took those exhibits back with them. And there was discussion in the cross-examination to do with how it would have, and I'm looking for my notes here, but what did it look like? How would it have been obvious to Mr. Rivera? And I think that's very material to.
But I mean, if we spot you that the pictures show that the hidden compartment is really hidden, okay, which is the point of the defense, we've still got a sufficiency of the evidence. If there's evidence that he was nervous and blah blah blah, even if it's really hidden. That doesn't mean that he didn't know about it. While I agree it doesn't mean he did, it doesn't mean he didn't. So even if it's really, really, really hidden, that doesn't mean he didn't know about it. And you're still back to the nervousness and all of the other issues, the inconsistencies in his stories and the other reasons why there might be sufficient evidence. So I'm prepared to spot you that the pictures would have shown it's really, really hidden. And maybe as a juror I would have acquitted the gentleman. But that's not our task here.
Well, but the court's task is to be able to say that none of the defendant's substantial rights were affected. That's basically, I think the Selva standard is that I can hear that the court's got to be able to say that there was nothing that could have affected the defendant's rights here. And I don't think the court can say that when we've got all of the defense exhibits missing.
See, that's what I'm trying to get at. We're not talking about a retrial. At a retrial, I can see your point. You want to show the jury the compartment, you can't. We're not there. We're at the appellate court. So my question is, what would we need to see in these pictures that we can't get from the transcript and we can't get from, I'm going to spot you without the pictures, that it's really hidden. Okay, so what is there?
One of the things was there was a dispute about whether markings on the screws could have been made when the government undid the compartment, or when they or whether it was just that not so recent. That's one of the issues. They had to have a dog that actually came and sniffed this out. And the other issue was, how different is it to a normal Yukon? You know, and the jury would be able to look at that and make some decision about it. Now, I, as the appellate attorney, my job is to look at the entire record. And the court's job also, we raised a sufficiency, the court's job is to look at the entire record. And I don't think there can be any dispute, but this was a significant and substantial part of the record when you've got all of the exhibits missing.
Well, what if it's sufficient without those exhibits? I mean, there were defense exhibits. They weren't part of the government's case, the main ones that you're complaining of. So what if we conclude the evidence is sufficient without the pictures?
Well,
you're basically saying we should reweigh the pictures. And I don't think I could just get out these pictures and go, whoa, this just looks even more hidden than I thought it was, because that's not an appellate evaluation.
Well, I think the appellate evaluation, though, is whether there is something that was in those pictures that I, as the appellate attorney, would have wanted to raise on the appeal as part of the exhibits. And I can't, you know, I didn't get to see them.
Well, if that's the standard, then any missing exhibit,
well,
you know,
I think,
would be a problem.
No, because you'd have to raise, I mean, we raised sufficiency of the evidence, Your Honor. So, and again, I just have to say that under this court's standard, we don't have to show prejudice. And in fact, it's almost impossible because we don't really know exactly what those exhibits showed. All we know is that they were in evidence and they were taken back and they were, of course, they were cross-examined on, but the jury actually got to see them. So, in a sense, at least, it's more significant than just missing testimony. But I see I'm running out of time. I'd like to address my other issue if I could, and that is the motion for new trial. And the standard here is, obviously, the court's going to review for abuse of discretion, but to warrant a new trial on other than newly discovered evidence, Mr. Rivera has to show that the error adversely affected his substantial rights. In other words, that there's a reasonable probability that the error in this case affected the jury's verdict. And the answer in this case is yes. The error here was a misstatement of fact in the government's closing argument that went to the central issue in this case, which was the defendant's credibility. As we set out in our brief, there was conflicting testimony regarding what the defendant said to the agents as to how and where he purchased the Yukon. The agents maintained that Mr. Rivera said he purchased it in Dallas. Mr. Rivera maintained that he told them that he bought it from his friend in Brownsville and that he bought the new plates in Brownsville. Well, the government had evidence in their Exhibit 2 that the truck was indeed registered in Dallas County. And on cross-examination, the government cross-examined Mr. Rivera about where he bought the plates. And he said, he swore, I bought these plates in Brownsville. And in her closing argument, the prosecutor came back and said, now you're going to look at this exhibit too, and you're going to see where the truck was registered and where he bought the plates, and you're going to see that it was not in Brownsville, Texas. And the significance of that is that that was really about the only piece of evidence where Mr. Rivera's word was substantiated by a document, because in fact the document did show that it was bought in Brownsville, and the government misled the jury on that.
The plates were bought in
Brownsville. The plates were bought in.
So part of the statement was correct, insofar as where it was purchased. It was purchased in Dallas.
Well, it was.
But the plates were secured in Brownsville.
It was correct in the fact that it was registered there. It certainly did not, you know, Mr. Rivera said that he bought it from his friend, which would support why he got the plates in Brownsville. And the significance of this is the jury actually sent out a note saying, we see that Exhibit 2 says the truck was registered in Dallas County. Could the plates have been bought in Brownsville if it says registered in Dallas County? And the judge did not, basically told them that's a question of fact. You have to answer it for yourself. The jury was clearly focused on Mr. Rivera's credibility, and this here was an exhibit that a government exhibit of a government document that the government put in for the truth of the matter asserted. And
but it didn't assert, the document itself didn't assert that the plates were bought in Dallas.
In Brownsville.
In Brownsville. You're saying the misstatement by, in other words, the document didn't lie.
No, the document didn't lie, but the government misstated what was in the document. The government misled the jury as to what was in the document. And it was clearly, this was a, no doubt it had an impact on the jury. It was material. They sent out a note specifically asking. And this is a case where, again, you have to remember that none of, I see my time is run.
Your sentence, that's all right.
Yeah, that none of his statements were recorded. It was all Mr. Rivera's word against the agent's word. And here was something that was, you know, was directly refuted that the jury was focused on. So I'd say for that reason, this is definitely was material and the court should reverse and remand for a new trial.
Thank you, Ms. Ling. You've saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
You want to address that last point first?
About the motion for new trial?
Yeah. I mean, not telling the jury that that showed that he bought the plate in Brownsville. The document didn't say that. In fact, the new evidence shows that just the opposite, that the plate would have been bought in Brownsville.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, we're under an abuse of discretion standard, and here the district court did not abuse its discretion. The district court found that there was no miscarriage of justice. It was undisputed at trial and on appeal, and the district court found as well that it was a good faith mistake. Also, that Mr. Rivera didn't object. The district court in this case held three hearings on the matter. And following lengthy arguments on April 20th of 05, the district court specifically framed the issue as whether there was enough evidence to conclude the conviction was reliable. And that's on page 1037. The district court then stated it wanted to read the record. Following that, the district court issued an oral order, but Judge Head took the additional step of issuing a written order on October 21st of 05. And there, the court found that credibility was not limited to where the license plates were bought, that there was evidence of inconsistent statements to law enforcement regarding the purchase of the Yukon, the whereabouts of Rivera on September 4th of 2004, which was the Saturday before he was arrested, and where the Yukon was during the week of his arrest. Also, the district court found in the order denying the motion for new trial that the softness of the sealant showed a recent intrusion into the Yukon, which Rivera owned. And the district court further noted that Soto had testified that Rivera didn't act surprised or shocked when the drugs were discovered. And that's the correct decision. And the reason is the closing argument of the prosecutor focused on a host of inconsistent statements and implausible accounts, which, as this court noted in Diaz-Carrion, is often the greatest inference or the greatest indication of guilty knowledge. But here, the prosecutor's remark was very brief, and the jury was instructed that attorney's statements are not evidence. Now, I realize the jury sent out a note during its second day of deliberations. It had a half-day deliberations on the first day. And then it sent out a note on the morning, I think it was around 11:30, about the exhibit. But one jury note is not determinative of anything. The 12 jurors sit behind there, and one juror can demand that a note be sent out about that, and presumably the foreman would comply.
Well, it seems like it was significant to them as to where the plates were bought because they sent a note out.
Well, it was also significant then that
the
they...
The only reason it would have been significant, it seemed to me, would be because the government's attorney said this shows that the plates were bought in Dallas and that he's lying.
Well, but the government's lawyer said a multitude of things about the inconsistent statements. The jury also sent a note out saying that it wanted to see Rivera's testimony because it had picked up a conflict about, I believe it is, the whereabouts of him that day. But I don't believe that this court has the prerogative to speculate about the inner workings of a jury. And one juror note is not enough to indicate anything. The jury also indicated early on that it couldn't reach a verdict, which is, as this court knows, is not all that uncommon, and Judge Head prodded them to continue deliberations, which is what they did. That is the whole purpose of the jury, and that's why we trust the jury to ferret out these fact issues. The cases that Ms. Ling or Mr. Rivera rely on in there are situations where the prosecutor intentionally misstated the record, and that's not the case here. What we have here is one isolated mistake in a plethora of evidence. Now, what the jury thought or didn't think, I don't know. And
I mean, if the question, I understand from the standpoint of the U.S. Attorney's Office why we care if it's intentional, but if the question is its impact on the trial, does it make any difference whether it's intentional or not as to whether the jury was impacted by it?
I think the court has to go on a fact-by-fact basis. In other words, some global general rule I don't believe would work in a particular case like this. This is not a situation where we have the evidence even or close or anything like that. We have a multitude of inconsistencies and other things. The fellow was carrying $1.7 million of methamphetamine, which there was a stipulation, which is one of the lost exhibits. But it was enough for, I'm not an expert on meth, but 3.3 to 3.5 dosages. He was carrying a tremendous amount of drugs. And so to that extent, we have to look at all this other evidence that the jury heard, and I can go, you know, I'll go into that more in relation to addressing the missing exhibits. But this is not a situation where the prosecutor kept pounding on this issue, kept revisiting this issue. As I recall, it was in the opening part of the closing argument. In other words, it wasn't in the rebuttal. It could not have been all that bad because the defendant did not even object. It wasn't like
it was a standard admonition about what the attorneys say is not evidence.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I believe that was in the beginning when the jury was seated.
If your best argument, I guess, would be what the attorneys say is not evidence, and the actual document doesn't say this. That the plates were bought in Brownsville.
Well, and that's correct. The face of the document, as we said in our brief, shows that. And so that's the jury's responsibility to ferret things out.
But I mean, the face of the document says something like Office 31, and I, you know, maybe. I mean, how would you know what that means? So I don't. While I agree that the document doesn't lie, I don't know that that necessarily answers the question. It's not like the document said Brownsville.
That's correct. It said
in which, and then the prosecutor got up and said Dallas, and the jury could look and go, well, I guess the prosecutor got it wrong.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's just neutral. The document's neutral. The prosecutor says it wasn't Brownsville, and here we are.
The prosecutor worked off the face of the document. Again, I believe it's just one sentence saying something of the fact that it wasn't Brownsville. And it, subsequently in these hearings, it comes out, I believe the code was 031. And defense counsel found out that that stood for Cameron County, which is where Brownsville is. And so you have all of this. But even if you were to go ahead and grant some type of new trial, it's not going to change the evidence. We still have a plethora of evidence, as I said before, of all his misstatements.
Well, actually, I have a question about that. I mean, if we granted a new trial, then the missing exhibits loom large, because what are we going to try? The defendant doesn't have any exhibits. I mean, the Yukon, I presume, is gone.
Well, and that was my point in relation to a substantial portion of the record is not missing for a host of reasons. But if this court were to agree that it were missing, then what? I have no idea where the Yukon is, but it's 7 years after the fact. And so what we have, quite frankly, I believe, is what we have in terms of the exhibits. And as this court pointed out, the exhibits relate
does
to...
Does it get a reverse and render then? If there's a, I mean, I'm not saying there'll be a reversal, but if there is that the situation as opposed to a remand?
I don't believe that would be appropriate at all. I mean, if you look at the Selva case and the cases that follow that, which is a seminal case, of course, in this jurisdiction, in that particular case and subsequent cases, what you typically have missing are the mandatory, what the court reporter should have transcribed under the Court Reporter Act, various types of the testimony, whether it's the jury charge being read, closing arguments, what have you. The exhibits stand alone. But here, there's no dispute about what these exhibits are. We all know that's a hidden compartment. The government agrees it was a hidden compartment. We have other exhibits here. Not as much as we would have had, obviously, if all the exhibits had been preserved. And the unfortunate consequence here is the result of a district court policy. It's not a violation of a statutory act. What it is Mr. Rivera's lawyer did not come pick up the exhibits. When we were discussing this in-house, I said to my fellow AUSAs, I would like to think that something like this wouldn't happen again under the the ECF filings, where people get notice and things like that, where somebody hasn't picked something up. Now, is that a dream? Perhaps.
The problem with it, frankly, the problem with exhibits is they're not in the ECF. There's some courts where they scan them in, but not all.
No, but I'm talking about notice that somebody maybe picked them up.
Well, you guys got notice because you went in pictures of.
We did. That's correct.
The defendant's attorney's not saying he didn't get notice. He's saying he had all these personal health issues
correct.
And whatever just kind of fell off the face of the earth.
That's correct. But, we, as I said before, we have other pictures. We agree it's a hidden compartment. And the context of the defendant's exhibits is clear from the trial testimony. But that also introduces the question of, it's the Ortega factors that guide us in these types of cases. This court repeatedly has said that. And the Ortega factors, of course, are non-inclusive, but this court in Ortega has given us a host of characteristics to look for in deciding these cases, just as it does in the Zuniga situation with aliens. And here, the jury heard a lot of testimony from numerous witnesses, including Rivera's relative, with whom he was close. And many of these Ortega factors were established. As Judge Haynes and Judge Benavides has pointed out, we had his nervousness, he failed to make eye contact, how he answered the question, the lack of surprise when $1.7 million in drugs were discovered. We have numerous inconsistent.
What happened to the passenger?
He was released. And so that, of course, that goes to how thorough the agents were in this case. The agents determined, Agent Busey talked about this, how you have to evaluate this entire situation. In this particular case, they decided that Mr. Soto, the person they call the brother-in-law, who's really a cousin-in-law, was not at all responsible. And one of the things that distinguished him is he was very forthcoming in his answers with the agent. He was very emotional, and he also testified at that trial. And he was part of the testimony talking about how Rivera was not acting surprised and things like that. So the jury also heard from Mr. Soto, you have possession of almost $3,000 in cash, and then you have the alterations to the Yukon. Now, we know that if the Yukon was raised, however, in Texas we have testimony that that isn't the be and end all. But we have his behavior, which this court has deemed very important on multiple occasions, flowing from Ortega Reina. And that ties into the sufficiency of the evidence and how the jury can infer guilty knowledge for a multitude of reasons, the inconsistent statements regarding the purchase of the Yukon, his explanations regarding Vicente Flores, who nobody else heard from, what he did the day before he was arrested, his suspicious demeanor, the high value of the meth, and although he's an experienced car salesman, he didn't see some of these things in his car that indicated the recent intrusion. We have the title reflecting that the previous owner was Exchange Auto Sales in Government Exhibit 2, but that we had testimony that they had been out of business for more than a year and a half, so he couldn't have bought that there. So essentially, he was found guilty based on these inconsistent, implausible statements, and his demeanor at the check.
And the amount.
Excuse me?
The amount, the value of this stuff.
Right, $1.7 million in methamphetamine. And as Agent Busey said, his 18 years experience confirmed that amount of drugs would not be placed in a vehicle without a person knowing it. In other words, there's no way that Mr. Rivera could be an unwitting dupe. And one thing I would like to briefly visit about, and I don't really, Judge Haynes was talking about the standard of review, which of course you must view in light of the verdict, and McNeil versus Brown, the Supreme Court recently reaffirmed that. But one point that they had made in their brief was how the judge during sentencing made the comment about how Mr. Rivera appeared critical credible and talked about his alleged innocence, which quite frankly I found surprising. And the reason I say that is the district court had the opportunity on more than one occasion to grant a directed verdict if he thought the evidence was shaky. He also had the opportunity to grant a motion for a new trial. But as I said when I came up here, the district court's written order specifically negates, with all due respect, his prior comment, because in this written order, which is on page 872, he goes through this litany of the various problems with with Rivera's credibility and things like that, evidencing his guilt in this particular situation. And so when you take all of that together, those missing exhibits, which are undisputed, they are...
So you're saying it was kind of a rhetorical... I mean, because Judge Head is a really seasoned trial judge. I mean, it's not his first rodeo, so to speak. And so for him to make a comment like that, I'm assuming he doesn't say that in every... I haven't seen him say that in every case that I've reviewed.
Me either.
So what does that mean? You're saying it's sort of rhetorical, like one never knows for sure because it's just a beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond all doubt? Or, I mean, is it that kind of a rhetorical comment, or did he really mean that he thought maybe Rivera was innocent, but he felt tied by his own standard of review of a jury verdict?
I use the word surprising because I really can't answer those questions. I can't second-guess Judge Head, who, as you point out, is very seasoned. But what I'm saying is that comment flew in the face of his prior actions. If you look, like, for example, with the directed verdicts, he doesn't entertain any argument. It's just denied. And as you well know from looking at Judge Head's records, this is a judge who is very, very savvy and intelligent about these types of cases, testimony, what have you. And as I just said, he had various avenues that were open to him that if he thought that there had been a miscarriage of justice, using that word, like, not in a particular standard of review, but felt that this man had been unfairly convicted, he had many opportunities to do something about it. And so that's why.
Does that play into the whole sentencing? I mean, generally it's a very deferential standard of review, but if he had some qualms about the verdict, and he also had qualms about his own ability to do something about it, realizing we're going back in time, so it's 2005. Now we all kind of know the Booker deal, but, I mean, back then that was a little different. Does that mean we should remand for resentencing in light of this?
Absolutely not.
Seeming inconsistency?
Judge Head was keenly aware of his sentencing discretion, and, in fact, defense counsel kept reminding him of such. And when Booker and Rita came out after Gall and Kimbrough, they just added to these cases, as the Sixth Circuit pointed out. It just reinforces that the district court has enormous sentencing discretion in these areas, because the district court is in the position where the court can look at the individual factors involving a particular defendant and whatnot. Here, the district court actually adopted the PSR, and to that end, and what the court specifically found, that was that it deferred to the Sentencing Commission and its expertise in this area, and found that a guideline sentence was proper. Again, and I say this with all due respect to Judge Head, Judge Head is a man who takes great pride in his courtroom, typically is very deferential to a jury, and quite frankly, if Judge Head had believed that a sentence below the 35 months was proper, Judge Head would have done that, or he would have made it clear. And there's no indication here in the record that Judge Head was struggling with anything regarding the guidelines or how they were crafted or what they stood for or anything like that. It was just this surprising comment that he made at the very end of this odyssey. And as I said before, his prior actions make that comment surprising, because it just doesn't add up. And so unless the court has any questions, the government requests that this court affirm the judgment of conviction and sentence.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Ms. Ling, you save time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, I just want to, since we did get into the sentencing, go into it a little bit. And I think that the judge's comments does go to that. And I think the
I think, if nothing else, this should be remanded for resentencing because it's clear, and we set it out in our brief, that the entire weight that the court gave was just, well, this was that amount of methamphetamine, and we're not going to, you know, that's Congress has spoken. And
but, I mean, Booker had been decided. Granted, it was young, shall we say, and we were all sort of learning what Booker meant then, but it had been decided. Judge Head was obviously aware of it, so when he knew it was advisory. And so if he really thought, man, I can't do anything about the jury verdict, but this guy really seems innocent, he could have either downwardly departed or downwardly varied.
He could have, except for the fact that the whole trend of the cases in this circuit was up till then that you don't go behind the policies behind the guidelines.
The world changed with Booker, so that would include us, the Fifth Circuit. I mean,
yes,
U.S. Supreme Court speaks, we listen.
but at that point, Gall and Rita hadn't come out, so there wasn't any specific guidance on how to do this. And with all due respect to Judge Head, I believe that he was mistaken in that, and he was mistaken in thinking that he could not go behind, because he specifically said, I'm not sure if he said, I know I have the discretion, but it's true, everybody was aware that Booker was out there. But he said, this is Congress has spoken, and I feel this is the way it is. And he did not entertain the idea that in this particular circumstance, that was too much in this case. I'd like to go also, I think that the court spoke about what would happen if this was remanded, and I'm not sure that that's really what the court should think about, but I do get the impression from Ms. Wilson that, you know, that they would try this case again without the exhibits. So I feel that...
It seems like more of a problem for you than for them.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's their burden to have the exhibits if they wanted
but
to have them.
But if you're missing exhibits that you're upset about.
Right,
they don't have to put on the defense exhibits. They didn't the first time. I assume they wouldn't the second time, but you'd want to put them on.
Well, and we can't say what would happen if this went back, but that's not really the issue. The issue is more is, did we show that it was substantial and significant?
I mean, I get that. I'm just saying, practically speaking, it's a little bit funny to ask for a remand when you say the missing exhibits make it impossible for you to do the appeal.
Well, then we'd have to see when we get back, Your Honor, but I don't. The other issue, of course, is the new trial, and I think that the government goes heavily on the sufficiency of the evidence, but that's not... You can, and Azubaiki case in the First Circuit makes clear that the fact that there's significant evidence to convict doesn't mean that that's what the jury actually went on. And Ms. Wilson is correct that we can't speculate about what the jury went on. We have to go by what they actually did, which was send out the note saying, questioning specifically that misstatement of fact that the prosecutor had brought up in her closing argument. And Judge Head did. He went through all the factors, but the one factor that he did not discuss in his written or in his oral order was this note from the jury. And it was clearly, the question is not how important it was to the government. The question is, how important was it to the jury? The question is there a reasonable probability that the jury relied on this? And I think there's more than a reasonable probability. This was something where they could actually look at the document and say, is this guy lying or not? Is he telling the truth? It was the prosecutor, it was a government document, and they had put it in for the truth of the matter asserted, Your Honor. And I think that that's clearly, it doesn't have to be a central issue to the case. It can go to the credibility, and credibility was a central issue in this case. And I would ask the court to remand for a new trial for that reason.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. Your case is under submission. Last case of